We're doing Navi Yonatan had eaten from the honey on the fields, and he was caught. And Shaul says that he should be executed, and the people say no, Yonatan should not be executed. And now we're up to the final great war. I shouldn't say final, but the pivotal great war of Shaul against Amalek. So Shmuel tells him, you have a mitzvah to destroy Amalek, and you're not supposed to leave anyone behind. And Shaul prepares the people for war, and now he has 200,000 infantrymen, 10,000 soldiers from the tribe of Judea, and Shaul approaches the city of Amalek. And here we have the verse, Vayarev Banachal. The verse says he camped his army in the valley, by the stream. Chazal tell us the words Vayarev Banachal indicate Shaul's thought process. Shaul said, we have a mitzvah of a Nachal Eitan, that you go by a stream which has at its bank, it has area that is really rough that cannot be plowed or planted. And if a person is found murdered, so we have this procession of taking a calf to this bank, we kill it, and we say we are not responsible for the murder that happened here. We tried to verify who did it. We weren't able to come up with evidence. So at least we're showing that something tremendous happened here, and we care, and we did what we could. So the Sanhedrin comes, right? Yes. It says the elders come, and the elders from Jerusalem come. I don't remember it saying that the whole community comes out there. That's what I remember. But from Jerusalem, there is representation that comes to the Egla Arufa from the Sanhedrin. So Shaul says, if the Torah cares so much for any person that's killed, how could I go and kill all these people? If I can kill the men, how could I kill the women? If I could kill the women, how could I kill the children? If I could kill the children, how can I kill the animals? So Shaul is thinking this through, and he has a quandary. Now, we can definitely understand Shaul. It's very hard to kill. Today we push buttons. Once upon a time, you put the sword into the person. You felt their kitchens going. Anytime killing is hard. And certainly when it involves killing women, children, and you can't justify to your own mind what did these people do to deserve it. Now, if you were to ask me, how does the Torah give us such a mitzvah? So I would say, I'd rather you stay with a good question than get a bad answer. Not because there isn't a good answer, but a person has to develop in their appreciation of how true and kind the way of Hashem is in order to be able to truthfully accept an answer about a mitzvah that sounds antithetical to truth and kindness. Meaning, we can whitewash the question. We can start using terminology that will make it as though this is okay. But I would rather remain at the point where we're killing children. We're talking about something which should bother us, and the only way you can connect to such a concept is if you can really, truly say, I know this is truth, I know Hashem said to do this, I know Hashem is kind, I know that there are things that I don't understand, but if Hashem says them, then He knows what's kind better than I know. So to say these sentences when a person's not holding there, so better don't say those sentences. Better be honest and say, I don't understand this mitzvah. I mean, if a person says, yes, I can really, I've worked it out, I know why Judaism is true, I know why I'm supposed to listen to a prophet, I know why there's no such thing as real values and morals and ethics aside from the Torah. Yeah, okay, if you reach that point, I could tell you in all honesty, it took me decades to reach that point, and I'm not such an old man yet. Took me a long time. A long, 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 long time. I don't think a thinking person can make that move very quickly. I think you have to question for a long time, but question honestly and learn and understand. And with time, you start appreciating that there's a lot there that we don't understand. And from what we do understand, we can understand enough to say this is truth and this is the epitome of kindness. But I don't believe that if a person says that too soon, they're being intellectually honest. I think that to say it when you don't see it is wrong. I don't think a person should say something they don't believe. And I don't think a person should believe beyond what they understand. There's very little where you should believe. Very little. There's going to be a point where you have to decide, do I have enough support? Do I have enough evidence that it's right to accept completely? But you're never going to be able to learn everything. But you have to have enough that it makes sense to make that move. And that's why I believe in Machon Meir, I don't like dealing with the question of why kill Amalek. I prefer say, you have a right question. Hold on to the question. Let's revisit the question. To try and give an answer, which I don't believe a person can connect to at the beginning stages of learning Judaism, I'd rather say, no, the question's good. Let's be intellectually honest and say we have a good question. Yes?
Hashem is absolute, right? All encompassing. When Hashem acts or says or commands us or does himself a certain thing, are all attributes in that act or saying or commandment? Or can it be that it's only one factor of what he said?
I don't know.
As you said, that like, to understand this, not that I'm trying to get you to explain this, it could be any mitzvah. Just because we're talking about this right now. You said, Hashem, I know Hashem is kind, and if this is what Hashem has said, then he knows kindness better than me. Could it be that this is netodin?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't want to go into it because I believe... you could justify anything if you don't build up to this properly, then you could justify anything. And the first thing you have to build is Hashem is true, and Torah is true, and Judaism is true, and our tradition is true, and the prophets are true, and every one of those can take a long time till you reach a point where you really you say, yeah, that's so. And until you reach that point where you could be at a point where you say, yeah, I accept Judaism as true, I accept the Torah as true, and I accept Hashem as true, so long as my cost is keep Torah and mitzvot, keep Shabbat, bring up your family a certain way. But the second you tell me you have to go and kill someone, well, wait a second, do I have it clear enough that I could pick up a gun and shoot someone over this? Right?
Okay, so not talking about this.
But we are talking about that. That's exactly what we're talking about. And that's why I would rather leave it as, wait, study, question, and learn. Don't just take it. I always give the example of a student who came here and said, I want to pick up a gun and go and shoot all the Arabs. I'm going to go fight for the American army in Afghanistan. And that's how I'm going to make the world a better place. So we asked him, why is that what's important in life? And he says, well, 6 months ago I was an adamant Christian, and 6 months before that I was an adamant Muslim. But now I know Torah is the truth, so now let me go kill the Muslims. Is that logical?
He's still a Muslim, he's not a Muslim.
I didn't say he's anything. I'm just saying, by the same token that you could look at that person and say, hold your horses. Don't go killing anyone. Study, understand more. You're new to all this. You can't just go and decide this is right. I'm going to go to Afghanistan and kill everyone, and that's what's right, and that's what's going to help the world. No, you got to understand, what does the Torah really want you to do? And learn. Don't just take it as, yeah, the Torah is the truth. That's it. I've seen the light. Doesn't work that way. So that's why over here also, we learn a parasha that should bother us. And when it bothers us, so then let's say, okay, we have good questions, we'll keep learning, and with time, hopefully we'll have good answers. So Shaul, we can definitely empathize with him. We can understand his feeling of questioning. But Shaul's question, the Malbim explains, did not come from an emotional place. Emotionally, he was prepared to do it. His problem was logical. And we have to remember that Shaul is much greater than we are. At the root of our questions, like the Chazon Ish writes, at the root of our questions is a more global question. Is this for real? A person walks around with the question of about everything, is it for real? About all of Torah, is it for real? And that's why every question lends itself back to that question. And we have to work on that first question to get good answers in order to deal with the other questions. It's like a relationship. If you have confidence that your spouse loves you and they're invested in you and everything's great and this is the perfect match and I'm supposed to be married to her, but as she was, I don't know what's a good example, there wasn't that much shul left and she finished the shul and left nothing for me. Okay, we got a mishloach manos. Someone gave us a true story. A couple got a very, very expensive chocolate. I didn't know there were such expensive chocolates, but for their wedding, they got, someone gave them a pack of chocolate that cost $800. I didn't know there's chocolate for $800. So she was sleeping, and he got up to open the gifts the morning after the wedding, and he found it, and he hid it from her. So then she finds it 3 days later, and now there's that feeling, so you don't care for me. You had an $800 chocolate you wanted to hide from me, right? So again, if the whole issue is you have a big Yetzer Hara for chocolate, that's one thing. But if the issue is you don't love me, so then I have a much bigger problem. So at the root of every question is a greater question. If I have the greater question resolved, I can deal with the fact that you can't hold yourself back from an $800 piece of chocolate. And the same is true with the mitzvot. If at the root of the mitzvot, Hashem, I have no problem with Hashem being true and the Torah being true and this being the way of life, so then if I have one question, I can deal with that. Our issue is that we're not there. That on some level, we still have questions we have to resolve, like the Chazon Ish writes. And at the root, we have this frustration. Wait, I all of life depends on these questions. Let me get good answers. And then if I can get good answers, then everything else, so to speak, can fall into place. So maybe we have to restart our series on the Chazon Ish's book, Emunah U'Bitachon, where he discusses this question. Those of you who want, you have a full series online. We did it more than once. You can learn it. But maybe in class we have to start it again. But coming back to here, Shaul is not there. Meaning one of the mistakes in reading about Shaul is to look at him like he is us. Shaul is a giant of Jewish history. We often remember his downfall, but we should remember that he was greater than David. That means to Shaul, it is obvious that what Hashem says is true, that the Torah is true, what the prophet says is true. On some level, Shaul had a weakness where logically he felt, maybe I'm not supposed to do this. Maybe there's a different way this should play itself out. And he was questioning the word of the prophet, which he should not have done. But it wasn't the same question that we had. We would be mistaken and unfair if we would take Shaul down to our size and say, I can understand Shaul had questions, because our questions come from a different place than his question came from. Our questions are more basic. His questions weren't there. Yes? It's a good question for a Thursday night. The Gemara says that Shaul was greater than David. What does that mean? Thursday night, Bezat Shem, we'll revisit that, if you remind me. So the first thing Shaul does is he sends word to the descendants of Yitro, of Jethro, and he says, do me a favor, pull out. I don't want you to be innocent bystanders. You shouldn't be killed in this war unnecessarily. And then Shaul attacks Amalek, and he is so victorious. Amalek is situated on the southeastern border of Israel. Okay, they're always Beretz Negev. They're down, Beersheva area. They're down in the south. So Shaul takes them down, all the way down to Egypt. He is victorious. And then Shaul, the Pasuk describes it as, Shaul and the nation had compassion over Agag, the king. Later on, Shaul will say, the nation had compassion. He will blame the nation, which is a great weakness in a leader. You cannot be led by the nation. You have to sense the nation. You have to feel how much you could push them and realize where your limitations are. But you have to lead. If there's one thing to sense the nation and work with them, it's quite another thing to say they're going to lead. You can't lead from behind. If you're the king, you have to see how to pull them in the right direction. And so the pasuk describes it that they caught Agag alive, they killed out the nation, and Shaul and the nation had mercy on Agag and the cattle, and they didn't want to destroy them. So Hashem tells Shmuel, I've changed my mind. Shaul is no longer supposed to be the king of Israel. He is undone. I told him to do one thing, and he's gone away from that. And so Shmuel does as all great Jewish leaders do. He spends all night pleading for Shaul. He doesn't accept it sitting down. One of the hallmarks of the Jewish leaders is that even when someone does something wrong, they try to fight for them. Let me see if I can help him out. We think, throw in the towel. He did wrong. Goodbye. Finished. Goodbye and good riddance. No. That's the theme that we read in the Haftarah today. Ashkenazim read Haftarah on the fast day. Hashem says, I have no interest in punishing you. And after Hashem says, just as the rain comes down and flourishes the world, everything flourishes from the rain, so too I've made a world where things can go right for you. I want things to go right for you. You've done something wrong, do tshuva. I'm not interested in you suffering. My goal is that things should go well in your life. Coming back to here, so Shmuel pleads the case for Shaul, and Hashem tells him in the morning, go. So Shmuel goes to Shaul, and Shaul approaches Shmuel and says, blessed are you to Hashem, I have upheld the word of Hashem. So Shmuel asks him, why do I hear cattle? I hear sheep. I hear cattle. Shaul says, the nation had pity over the cattle, and they said, let's bring back some of the cattle to serve Hashem. But don't worry, we finished off everything else. So Shmuel says to Shaul, hold it, I want to tell you what Hashem said to me tonight. Are you prepared? Shaul says, I'm listening. Shmuel says, and here we have very important lines, the lines of rebuke from Shmuel to Shaul are key points in our own building of our personality. Shmuel says to Shaul, if you think you're small, you're not. That's point number one. Sometimes we allow ourselves to do something wrong because we don't feel like we're great. If I thought that everyone's looking at me, I'm an important person, then I have to behave a certain way. If I think that, what difference does it make? I can do what I want. So then I let myself do what I want. One of the keys to standing up to mitzvot is to value myself. That's why when people go to Chutz La'aretz, if at all possible, it's important to wear their tzitzit out. It's important to wear a yarmulke. When a person takes off the yarmulke or takes off his tzitzit, so I'm not telling you, again, I'm not saying go to places where it's dangerous to be identified as a Jew and then go around with your yarmulke and tzitzit out, etc. What I am saying is, where it's possible, hold yourself to that standard. A person won't walk into a movie theater, probably, with a yarmulke and his tzitzit out. It doesn't look so nice for a Jew to be there, right? There are certain places where a person won't go. Because I'm on that standard. So what if people say, I'll take off my... keep the yarmulke on. People say, I'll take off my yarmulke so I could cut in line. Keep the yarmulke on. Don't cut in line. Right? That's hold yourself to that standard. Shmuel says to Shaul, his first point of rebuke is, you might think you're little. You're not. Hashem has appointed you as a leader. Every one of us has to view it that way. I think I'm little. I'm not little. People are looking at me, and I have to hold myself to that standard. So that's point one. And the continuation we'll see is Hashem next week.